what the deferred sales trust creates is what we like to refer to as a way out.
Welcome to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals who work with investors, buyers, and sellers of commercial real estate coast to coast. Whether you're an investor, broker, lender, property manager, attorney, or accountant, we're here to learn from the experts.
Welcome to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio. We're so glad you could join us. My name is Jadarren Gross. I'm a real estate investor and a commercial property insurance broker. Our goal here is to have a conversation about commercial real estate, and today is no different. Our guest today is Richard Hershey with WeReduceTaxes.com. If you or your clients are invested in real estate, and you thought the options for dealing with the taxes were limited to selling and paying the taxes on your capital gains or doing a 1031 exchange, or quite often just to do nothing because of the hassle, you are going to appreciate the solution that Richard brings for real estate investors. Before we get into that, though, I just want to remind you that no matter how you found us, whether it was LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, we are glad you're here. And as always, if you like what we're doing, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Your likes, shares, and follows are always greatly appreciated. On another quick note, if you haven't already, be sure to grab my Real Estate Investor's Guide to commercial insurance at jdarrengross.com. That's J, the letter J, Darren, D-A-R-R-I-N, Gross, G-R-O-S-S.com. And also, if you have, or if any of your clients have any questions about their commercial real estate insurance, reach out to me. I will do all I can to help you. All right, let's get on to the program. Here now is my conversation with Richard Hershey of WeReduceTaxes.com.
All right, today we have with us Richard Hershey. Richard is with WeReduceTaxes.com. Richard, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to the time we're going to spend together today.
Well, and likewise, I do too. And today could not be any more timely. Just last week, I was with my accountant, and we were discussing all things taxes, and of which included the depreciation schedules for real estate, and that led to the conversation about what happens when you sell the property, recapture, and all that fun stuff. So I'm really looking forward to talking with you in depth here. But before we get, before I get ahead of ourselves, Richard, could you do us a favor and introduce yourself and tell a little bit about yourself and your firm and let the audience know who you are?
Yeah, Darren, I appreciate that. I've been in the financial service industry for, it's hard to really say, close to 30 years, and that's a tough thing to get out, as you know. I've seen a lot of things come and go. I've been involved primarily in distribution of financial service products like insurance and securities and things of that nature. And a couple of years ago, I came upon this opportunity that was very unique. And as you mentioned, folks in real estate have a lot of trouble with their exit strategy. So I've always been looking for a way to approach and help our clients with their real estate issues, taxes, financial performance, and things of that nature. So this kind of fell into our lap as an opportunity. That being said, what we do is we help real estate investors who are facing capital gain issues on their sale of real estate. Well, so whether it's a primary residence or it's an investment property or land or a commercial building or something like that, or even in the sale of a business, those transactions, if you're lucky, you have a gain and you're facing capital gain issues. So our program, the Deferred Sales Trust, is something that can help alleviate or minimize the impact of the capital gain tax.
Got it. And the deferred sales trust, I want to get into that quite a bit more, because historically, as I've understood it, and I think most people do, if you own real estate as an investment, and for all the years that you've owned it, you've taken depreciation, the property has actually appreciated in value, and on the day you want to sell, you've got to recapture that depreciation, and you've also got the gain from the price you bought it at to now the sale price, and presumably it's up. Hopefully it's doubled or more for you. But through all of that ownership, you haven't had to recognize a gain, and the gain's not recognized until you to sell. And so what I've known and what I've talked with many investors about and has historically been kind of the recognition of what your options are, were essentially three options. Either A, you could elect to pay the taxes, which I'm surprised at how many people I know that just that's the way they operate. They don't even think twice about it. They just pay the taxes and move on. You could elect to do the 1031 exchange, which has numerous, I guess, there's a process, I guess, what that is there's a neutral third party that takes the proceeds, and then you've got timelines you've got to meet to identify and invest. Or if you don't like either one of those options, you just continue to be a landlord or investor, and you're still doing what you've been doing, and nothing changes. And when I found you on LinkedIn and learned a little bit about what you do, it looks like you've I don't know if you've uncovered or discovered a new way or an alternative way, but let's talk a little bit about your deferred sales.
You know, Darren, you hit the nail right on the head. When I talk to potential customers or clients, they all review the same scenario that you did, which is, you know, should I sell? Should I keep it? If I sell, what do I do? You know, do I do a 1031 exchange? Do I pay the tax? You know, and they get confused. And unfortunately, more often than not, what I'm seeing is they're taking that latter option where they don't really do anything. They just can't grips with, you know, paying that tax, or the process of a 1031 exchange just seems overwhelming. In today's marketplace, what we're seeing in many asset classes, there's tremendous price appreciation. The value of the real estate has risen to such levels where, you know, it's kind of a seller's market today, where we have very high values. So these properties, especially like if you're an apartment building owner, or if you have a commercial property like an office building, certain asset classes are really undergoing tremendous price appreciation, and inventories are very low. On a regular basis, when I talk to potential clients, is, you know, the market here, especially in Southern California, is such that the rate of return, or what we call the cap rate, is very low, which means the value for their real estate is very high, and the rate of return after you factor in rents and all that kind of thing is very low. So you're able to sell your property for maybe a 3% cap rate. It's very difficult to convince somebody who has had the hands-on management, the day-to-day responsibility of managing their estate, to sell that through a 1031 exchange and potentially reinvest in another market. So you're not going to talk somebody into selling a Southern California real estate venture and reinvesting that into another market, perhaps in Texas or Florida or somewhere along the East Coast or in the Midwest. Just the very nature of owning real estate is they tend to be more independent and they tend to be more hands-on. So more right. often than not, that opportunity stalls. So if you're a real estate agent, we're in an unusual circumstance today where there's a lot of money that wants to invest or be deployed in real estate. So we're in an unusual circumstance where there's a lot of financing and there's a lot of money available, but there's very limited opportunity. The inventory is very low in many markets because they don't have a sufficient exit strategy. What the deferred sales trust creates is what we like to refer to as a way out. It really is a fourth option for folks to consider. So the basis of our transaction is such that we're able to allow for an investment property to be sold on a tax-deferred basis. There is no requirement, like there is in a 1031 exchange, that they replace that property, that they you have to worry about the 45-day identification period. There's no 180-day window. There literally is none of the requirements that are present in a 1031 exchange. Well, Darren, to summarize, what we're able to do is we are able to help a real estate investor sell a property. So imagine being able to sell your apartment building on a tax-deferred basis, not have to worry about the 45-day identification period, not have to worry about closing the transaction in that 180-day period of time. You literally can sell your property on a tax-deferred basis, take the proceeds from that sale, and invest it into alternative investments like stocks, bonds, mutual funds. You can buy an annuity. You can invest in another business. You literally can convert your real estate into other asset categories that might be able to help you diversify your current financial situation without having to complete a 1031 exchange.
Hmm. So the trust, you create a trust and the proceeds go into that? Is that what I understand from the sale of the property?
Yeah, there's a couple of moving parts. So what I like to do is I kind of like to help visualize this. Obviously, a lot of the conversations that we have are over the phone initially. So what I do here, for those of you that happen to be listening and you might be at your desk, if you have access to a piece of paper, we can kind of give you a little bit of a diagram here to sort of outline how the opportunity works. So what I would do is draw a triangle, and on one side, the lower left-hand side of the triangle, I would write the word seller. On the right-hand side of the triangle, I would write the word buyer. And at the top of the triangle, I would write the word trust. So the way the process works, there's three basic steps that need to be completed. In any real estate transaction, the first step is that the buyer and the seller need to agree to terms and conditions. So if we put a two-way arrow between the bottom of the triangle, between the seller and the buyer, that would be step number one. So the seller is going to sell the property for $2 million. The buyer is going to buy the property for $2 million. So they have a basic understanding of the terms and conditions. Now they're ready for escrow. What we do at this point is we create a trust mechanism that allows for our program to take place. So we establish the deferred sales trust, escrow is opened, and during the escrow process, there's typically several things that need to occur. But what's very common in most escrows, there's going to be an inspection period and there's going to be a period of time where the buyer is able to secure their financing. So those are called contingencies. We execute what's called a transfer of the property. So what we do during step number two is picture an upward arrow from seller to the trust. What we do is at the conclusion of the escrow process, when the contingencies have been lifted, primarily the financing is secure and the inspections are approved, we execute a physical transfer of the property from the seller into this newly created deferred sales trust mechanism or vehicle. At this point, it's critical to understand that the trust is now in possession of the property. Once that occurs, the trust will finalize and complete the sale with the buyer. So step number two, there's an upward arrow from the seller to the trust on our triangle. Step number three, there's a downward arrow from the trust to the buyer. So at this point, the buyer needs to perform. They deposit their consideration into escrow. So I would put a dollar sign inside of the triangle, and that would represent that deposit. So whether it's all cash or a combination of cash and mortgage, escrow is funded. The escrow officers complete their part of the transaction. You know, they net out the fees and commissions and pay off any mortgages or whatever complications or whatever instructions are part of the escrow process are completed. At the end of the escrow process, the escrow officer needs to make a decision as to what to do with the money. At this point, it's very critical that they follow the procedures. In a normal 1031 exchange process, what would happen at the completion of escrow? Typically, the money is sent to a third party. That third party is referred to as a qualified intermediary or an accommodator. If the money is sent by escrow directly to the seller, that triggers a taxable event.
Right.
And most folks don't want that. They want to keep the transaction tax deferred. We utilize the same process that is present in a potential 1031 exchange, and that we forward the money from escrow to that third party accommodator or qualified intermediary. We give the client the potential to execute or to have the ability to find a potential 1031 exchange replacement. So we don't take that window of opportunity away from them. We encourage them to, you know, be confident and be secure in their decision. So their broker, their agent, themselves can continue to look for a potential 1031 exchange replacement property. We like to say the miracle replacement, but you get the point.
Right.
We're not taking anything away from them. So what happens on the 45th day, the accommodator is going to make a call and they're going to ask, have you found a potential replacement and do you intend to identify any properties as a potential replacement? So let's just assume that the answer is no, and their intent is to continue with the deferred sales trust. So what happens on the 46th day, the answer is going to be no, we're not intending to identify that replacement. We now have what's called a failed exchange. So at this point, what happens is we have language in the agreement with the accommodator that allows for the orderly transfer of the funds from escrow that are now with the accommodator to be transferred to a custodial account at a major financial institution. Something similar to perhaps Bank of New York Mellon, a Fidelity, a Schwab, some facility like that. The type of account that's established is a trust account on behalf of the seller of that property. When the money gets deposited, the trustees of the trust, there are trustees in place that manage the process here. The funds go from the accommodator into a custodial account where the trustees of the trust are now able to invest that money in a pretty liberal fashion. There's a number of things that they can do. Typically, the goal is to invest the money to produce a rate of return or income that can be distributed back to the former owner of the property. The transfer of the money from the accommodator to this trust account that's been established is done and helps maintain the tax-deferred status of the money. So at this point, the seller has not had what's considered to be constructive receipt of the funds, and this allows that transaction to remain tax-deferred.
So the fact that the money is in a third party's hands, it maintains that tax-deferred status, correct?
That is correct.
All right. So you brought up a couple things here I wanted to ask you about. So when the transfer of the property goes from the seller to the trust, can you help us understand the tax issues associated with that?
Sure. And this is an area, Darren, where we always like to, you know, put that disclaimer out that, you know, I'm not a tax attorney or CPA. If we were in person here, I'd joke with you. I only play one on TV. But, you know, you do have to get this verified by your own tax professionals. But the premise and the concept is this, is that the transfer goes from the seller to the trust. The trust now owns the property based on whatever the predetermined terms and conditions of the anticipated sale are. So the example that we've been using, that's going to be $2 million. So at this point, there is a gain. That gain is recognized. However, constructive receipt is not been completed by the buyer, by the seller. At this point, the seller has not received any money, so the tax liability is still in a deferred status. The tax liability is generally considered to be due and payable when you actually receive any part of the payment. At this point, the seller has not received any money, so therefore no taxes are due because they have not had constructive receipt of the money. Does that help?
Oh, yeah. No, that helps a lot. So let me ask you then. So as you go forward, the vehicle, and maybe what we should do is you explain once the sale's occurred, what happens? I mean, because I'm assuming the whole goal of this was to get out of real estate and get into something else and to continue to generate some sort of revenue. How does that play out as you go forward there for the taxes and what is tax? I mean, the proceeds, does the principal stay intact? Is there a recognition of the gain if the principal?
Darren, at this point, I know a lot of investors are scratching their head because this is kind of a unique concept. You know, we're real estate investors are typically very familiar with the rules of a 1031 exchange. So just to review briefly, in a 1031 exchange, you have to replace the property being sold with a property of equal or greater value, and you have to identify that replacement in 45 days, and you have a total of 180 days to close that transaction. If you have any debt or mortgage on that property, you must also replace the mortgage or the debt in an equal or greater fashion, also recognizing those same time frames. What the deferred sales trust does is it does not use the IRS. What the deferred sale trust does is it does not utilize Section 1031 at all. We use a different section of the tax code. That section of the tax code is Section 453. So we're under a different set of rules and requirements to have a successful transaction. At this point, it's important to understand that the transfer of the property to the trust, the sale of the property by the trust to the buyer, the money going through escrow, from escrow to the accommodator, and now from the accommodator into the trust account, has all occurred on a tax-deferred basis. So we're not avoiding any taxes, and I want to make sure that that point's understood. We're not avoiding anything. We're just deferring it. So the net effect is very similar to the result that you would have if you were completing a 1031 exchange. You're able to take the proceeds from selling, let's call it property A, and moving all of that money into property B. If you do that successfully and follow the rules, that transaction occurs on a tax-deferred basis.
Right. So let me ask you, just as a, and you kind of, when you were introducing the transaction and the option for the seller to do a 1031, and on day 46, it's determined that they're not going to be able to do a 1031, that then they go into the trust. I'm assuming that at that point you've lost any future opportunities to do the 1031. You can't decide 3 years after getting into a deferred sales trust that now you want to go buy another property and roll that deferred gains into that new property. Am I correct, or can you do that?
Darren, that's a good question. The deferred sales trust does not extend the requirements for a successful 1031 exchange. So, in other words, once you miss the 45-day window of identification, or you miss the 180 days, that's gone forever. So, once a client utilizes the deferred sales trust, he's operating in a different arena, if you will. So what happens is the money goes from the accommodator into the trust account. The trustees of the trust are now able to deploy those assets in a pretty liberal fashion, and those funds are now in a tax deferred status. We don't want to imply that in the future, if they want to get back into real estate, that they could do it through a 1031 exchange. That option is no longer available to them. So that's an important consideration as to whether or not to do a 1031 exchange or to consider doing a deferred sales trust. Now, that being said, it's important to also recognize that one of the eligible investment options for the trustees to consider is real estate. So that the trust is not prohibited from purchasing real estate as one of the investment options that may be utilized inside of the trust. Does that help?
Yeah. Now, I think understand. So the 1031 is at that, the option for the 1031 is at the original point of sale. And once you go past 46 days, that's gone. But within the trust, real estate could be an investment vehicle that could be used, if I understood right.
That's correct. Thank you.
Got it. Okay. So then playing this thing out here. So I've sold my property. In the sales process, we created a deferred sales trust. The proceeds are invested in whatever vehicle, and let's say it's not real estate, just for example's sake. Hopefully there's a return. I'm assuming there's any investment you're looking for a return. How does the tax play out going forward? Are the proceeds from the investment, I mean, you've got the principal, which includes that gross amount that was, the gain net, the whatever mortgages or whatever that I had on the original property, and now I'm hopefully getting some sort of a rate of return. Is the return then taxed as ordinary income, or is that, I'm assuming, does that play out just as regular ordinary income?
Yeah, that's a good question. Let me help you understand how the the program works after this point. So now we're all clear. We're probably all on the same page here. Just to review where we are, the money's now inside of the trust. It's been invested, and now it's earning a rate of return. So just to keep the example consistent, let's just say that there's $2 million net that was deposited into the trust, and that was invested in a way where it's yielding a 5% rate of return. That 5% rate of return is distributed by the trust to the former seller, okay? And that income is going to be taxed as ordinary income. So let's, the example we're using is $100,000 a year. That gets distributed out of the trust to the seller. That is considered ordinary income and would be taxed based on the individual taxpayer's income tax brackets. The principal or the corpus of the trust remains tax deferred. If, however, the client decides, let's say they want $100,000 out of the $2 million that's sitting inside of the trust, if that was distributed, that would be taxed on a capital gain schedule on a pro rata basis. So to the degree that they had basis, that portion would be tax-free. To the degree that they had capital gain, that would be taxed as capital gain. To the degree that they had depreciation recapture, that portion would be taxed at depreciation capture rates. So each state varies. I know in California, I'm a little bit more familiar with the examples here. The capital gain rate for the federal government currently is 20%. The state rate, the maximum level, is 13.3. The new taxes that are involved with the Medicare tax, that 3.8%, some folks refer to it as Obamacare. The total in California for capital gains could be as high as 37.1%. Depreciation recapture is taxed separately, and that number typically is around 25%. So you can see the potential tax impact is pretty significant. However, that's how it would be taxed. So as a review, the gains or the principal that's inside of the trust, if that comes out, that's taxed on a pro rata basis, either capital gains and or depreciation recapture. Any distributions of earnings by the trust are taxed as ordinary income.
Got it. So the big beautiful thing about this is you're able to get into different investments. I mean, that's the, as opposed to the 1031 is a pretty strict property for property kind of limitation.
Yeah, a lot of clients who end up considering a deferred sales trust often are attracted to several things. One, they're able to sell their real estate at what many people are considering to be, you know, fairly high values today. So they're able to you know, maximize the rate of return on their real estate investment. They're also able to diversify. So a lot of folks that we work with tend to be older. They've had the property, you know, 15, 20, 30 years in some cases, even longer in some. And maybe they're ready to do something else. They're retiring. They don't want the day-to-day management responsibility of operating the property anymore. Or perhaps the property has been fully depreciated, and to really get any more value out of it, they need to make capital investments that maybe they're not prepared to do. There's many reasons, but those are very typical. One, they're motivated by maximizing the rate of return on the property. Two, they're looking for a different management or a different lifestyle, if you will, and they're looking for diversification. What the deferred sales trust does allows them to consider alternative investments. A lot of times, real estate investors tend to be very heavily concentrated in real estate and often don't have exposure to other investments. So the deferred sales trust is an excellent vehicle to give a little bit more diversity to their overall portfolio, and that's attractive to a lot of people.
Got it. Let me ask you, let's go down the road here a little bit further. As you indicated, you know, somebody's held a property for a number of years. They liquidate. They go through the or they go into the deferred sales trust. And ultimately, years later, they're no longer with us. What happens at that point? You know, the trust is ongoing. Do the heirs, can you explain a little bit about that? I'm just kind of looking at it from a, you know, go a few miles further, a few years further. How does that play out?
Sure. The trust becomes, let's say it's a husband and wife who went into this. And, you know, the estate planning team would work with the advisors and the children of the family that's considering, you know, doing this. So let's just assume at the second death that, you know, what do we do now? So let's just say there's three kids. The trust is flexible in that, you know, let's say you have three kids. You have Johnny, who wants a Ferrari right away, can't wait to get his hands on the money. You have Mary, who says, you know, I wouldn't mind paying off my house and, you know, maybe leaving the rest behind. And you have Susan, who says, you know, I'm fortunate. I don't need any of it. So the trust itself can accommodate any one of those scenarios. So upon death of the second person, the beneficiaries of that trust are able to either take a partial withdrawal of their pro rata share, a full withdrawal, or anything in between. So they can take some of the money, all the money, none of the money. All of that could be accomplished. In the event that they take any money, the person receiving the money, they would pay their portion of the capital gain at that time.
Okay, so there's not a step-up basis upon the second death?
No, the step-up is something that needs to be considered again. You know, you have to work with your tax professionals to make a decision here. A step-up in basis from real estate comes by owning and holding the real estate at death. And in this case, remember, the property has already been sold.
So gotcha.
There's not a property in place to step up. So the capital gains are due.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Interesting. Well,
on that point, Darren, there is flexibility in that the beneficiaries get to decide if and when they're going to liquidate their respective positions.
Right, because they could continue with the proceeds from the investments ongoing, right?
I mean, it,
you don't have to liquidate the trust per se, but just at that second death, however the estate planning set up for the heirs, then those options become available. Or I guess you have to act as the will and all that indicated.
Correct. There's, you know, the estate plan will be followed that the family is established, but from the trust perspective, just the raw answer is that the beneficiaries can decide or elect to continue their pro rata share can continue, or they can liquidate and incur the capital gain tax at the time of liquidation for their pro rata share of the trust.
Got it. Well, this is fascinating as another option for what to do with real estate investment when you're looking to sell a property or get out of real estate. I've always thought that once a real estate investor, always a real estate investor, just based on all of the you know, things we've discussed with recapture and depreciation and appreciation and capital gains and all that. And this is clearly another option and an interesting one at that. I'm just looking on our time here, and I don't want to keep you all day. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. Is there anything that I didn't ask that you would like to make certain that we included in our conversation?
You know, we've had a pretty thorough conversation here. One of the things that I experience very often, just like our initial reaction when we first met, is that a common first statement that I get is, how come I've never heard of this before? I've been around 100 years and I know everything, and how come I've never heard of this before? It's important to understand that we've been conducting this type of transaction for over 20 years. We've helped literally hundreds and hundreds, even thousands of customers with this transaction. It's been very successful for those people. And it's just one of those tools that are out there that a lot of people don't understand, including a lot of tax professionals. Once we explain them and educate them of the process, generally they're very surprised at really how simple the transaction is, but they're really impressed by the benefit that their clients receive from considering this type of program.
Yeah, I'll bet. And just sitting here thinking, one of the thoughts kind of my head originally, I meant to ask earlier, but I'm assuming in 20 years it's been tested. I mean, you were citing, what was the code, 40?
Yeah, section 453. It's a tax code that actually predates Section 1031 exchange. So it's been a very integral part of the economic engine of the country. And I'd be happy to provide additional information for any of our listeners today that would like to receive it.
Oh, that's great. And before we wrap up here, I just want to point out to our listeners that Richard is making available there'll be a link in the, if you scroll down through the show description there's a link for his Way Out article. Way Out meaning a way to defer the taxes from the proceeds of a real estate sale. And so be sure to click on the link down there, and you can get that article from Richard. And Richard, what's a great way, or what's the best way for people to get in touch with you if they'd like to get in touch with you or get additional information about you and your firm and opportunity to work with you?
Yeah, Darren, I really appreciate the effort that you've given me today and the time and respect, and it's been a very fun opportunity for me here. What we're looking for is to meet with individual real estate owners or their teams. So if you're a CPA, if you're a commercial real estate agent, or if you're a real estate agent that works with residential sales, or you're a business broker, we have an education package that we're happy to provide for you and help educate you to make you more aware of the opportunity. The best way to reach me, my name again is Richard Hershey. My website is WeReduceTaxes.com. A good phone number for me is area code 818-703-6400.
Great. Well, Richard, I can't say thank you enough. I've appreciated the opportunity to learn more about deferred tax. Deferred sales trust. I had my I had a DTS instead of a DST there. The deferred sales trust there. So I've learned a lot, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. And like I do, I would ask that if you're agreeable, we try and do this again here in the future and continue the conversation.
I'd love to be able to come back anytime you have an opportunity. I'd love to take advantage of it.
I hope you learned something and that you or your clients can take advantage of the information Richard presented. If you've got somebody, or if you or somebody's trying to sell a property and not liking your options, certainly something to consider. And don't forget to click on the link in the show notes there to get your free copy of Richard's A Way Out. It's an article providing additional details on how the deferred sales trust works. I want to remind you that, as always, your likes, your shares, your follows are greatly appreciated. If you like what we're doing, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And also, if you're on LinkedIn, look up our group if you have not already joined. Our group is Commercial Real Estate Pro Network. We'd love to have you inside the group. And a couple other quick notes here. Be sure to grab my Real Estate Investor's Guide to Commercial Insurance. There's a lot of great information in there to guide you and make sure that you're set up properly on your insurance. And if you do have any questions, reach out to me. I'll do everything I can to help you with your commercial real estate insurance. That about wraps it up. Until next time, thanks for listening to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio.
You're listening to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals. For more information on this or any of our guests, like us on Facebook, CREPN Radio.